Welcome everyone to the 1 year anniversary episode of Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. I'm your host, Rick Campos. But wait, not today. For this episode, the show's been hijacked by one of my favorite designer pals, Riley Clausen. You might remember her from episode 7 of the podcast. She was one of my very first interviews. Today, the table has turned. In this special anniversary episode, Riley is asking the questions, and I'm the one doing the storytelling. We discuss the making of the podcast and how it's contributed to the design community. We uncover the mystery behind my day job, blow the cover off my weekend disguise, expose my introvert tendencies, and a few other things you may not know about me. Let's get started.
Hi, everybody. It's Riley Clausen, and I'm sure you've all heard of Instagram takeovers. But today I am taking over the podcast, Design Biz Survival Guide, because I bet everybody who listens to this wants to know who the heck Rick Campos is and what on earth he does and how he got involved in doing a podcast. I absolutely love this podcast. You reached out to me a while ago to do it, and ever since I've listened to all of them, I have gotten so much valuable information you have no idea.
Thank you. I'm so grateful that you agreed to participate.
Oh, yeah, I love it. We've had two dates at Bandera, which include wine, food, and shooting the breeze about the design biz. So I just thought it'd be fun to turn the tables and interview Rick.
And I think that's a great idea, actually. I think it's time to let people know a little bit about me. I never realized how one-sided this whole this whole adventure is.
I know.
And now that I'm sitting in the hot seat, I also understand, like, you guys are the ones that are doing all the heavy lifting.
Well, not necessarily, because you've been at it way longer than most of us, so...
I'm just asking the questions.
Okay. Now we're going to get real.
All right.
So let's start off. Hi, Rick.
Well, hello.
How does it feel to you now to be in the passenger seat? Are you more nervous or less nervous or excited or dreading it?
I don't think I'm nervous anymore. I mean, it's been a year doing the podcast, and so the nerves have finally worn off. But yeah, I'm definitely used to asking the questions and not answering the questions so much. So this should be interesting, but I think it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
It's the new you.
It's the new me.
So you've interviewed tons of designers about their businesses. And like I said before, you do such a great job getting really down to the nitty gritty, which is what we all want to know, is what goes on behind the scenes. And you've been able to like expose things like those dirty topics no one wants to talk about, like billing. I mean, for me, billing. How does everyone else do it? No one wants to share it. So I'm super happy, and you have a gift for doing that. I would not have that gift, but you have the gift. Anything that you've discovered through all these podcasts that have totally shocked you, like where you've walked away and go, OMG, I have no idea that happens.
I think, you know, just when you think you've seen and heard it all. there's a lot of things that I've learned doing these interviews, starting with, let's talk about pricing for a second, because I do think that it's so valuable, and there's so few opportunities for other designers to kind of hear the perspective from design professionals on how they price and the strategy associated with that and the challenges associated with that. So my approach when I talk to different designers is, you know, I always go in very open book. You can talk about whatever you want. You can go as deep as you'd like or keep it as simple as you like. I'm never going to push any designer to, you know, divulge information that they're not comfortable divulging. But what I've found 9 times out of 10 is once I hit record, designers are just a total open book, which I've kind of always known. And that's partly what prompted the podcast in the first place, because there's this whole perception that, you know, it's this whole secret society and nobody's talking about things like pricing and sources and things like that. Yet when I'm in a room with my designer friends, that's kind of all we talk about. So I'm here to tell you that, you know, there's a lot of great design professionals out there that are willing to share with their peers in the interest of, you know, elevating their businesses and the industry as a whole. So
I've in addition to how they price, I've also loved hearing why they do what they do. For instance, Christopher Kennedy, he had such a great background story on how he gets to that and why, and his whole reasoning behind it. So I love that a lot of those podcasts have included the whys, not just this is how we do it, but this is why. Because sometimes it's hard to explain to your clients, hey, this is a smoking deal and I'm just not wording it right.
That interview with Christopher was very telling, and he is he's a real advocate when it comes to pricing and just, designers making money. And so he has done a lot of legwork and he's explored a lot of different variations on pricing, and he was willing to share all of those different approaches to pricing. But the one thing that I found about pricing in our industry, in our field, is that every designer wants that magic answer, what's the best pricing structure? But the reality is every single one of our businesses is so different. So I always tell designers, rather than asking, a designer, how do you price? And let me try that. Understand your business first, going back to your why. Understand your business, your business model, and then talk to people who have a business model that is similar to yours. I see a lot of, I'm XYZ designer, but I'm networking with the designer on a totally different level in a totally different market who is officing and maybe has a much larger staff than I. So naturally their pricing structure is not going to work for me. So there is no magic answer. And I know it's a challenge, but I think the more people that participate in the podcast and share, the more examples that will be out there so that design professionals can listen and learn and kind of emulate from other design businesses that are like theirs.
I think your podcast has taught me more in my very small amount of years than I have from asking everybody, reading up on it on the internet. So I so appreciate that. Everybody wants to know this. What do you do? Tell me about you. Like, what the heck?
What the heck do I do? I don't just podcast. This is my little passion project. I don't make a living podcasting, but I do enjoy it a lot. But I do this kind of late at night and on the weekends. My day gig is in the design industry. I've been in the industry for over 10 years. I own my own business for a few years, and I owned a small retail space as well. And I did design on my own after I graduated from design school. And then about 6 years ago, I jumped on board with a fellow designer and did some design work for him. I joined his team. And over the course of that 6 years, my responsibilities kind of evolved more into business development and office management and that type of thing.
So when you say business development, you're going out and working with securing contracts and finding clients, or?
Right. I became an extension of the principal designer and the owner. And so we basically went to all the client meetings together. We would sit down and evaluate whether or not that client was a good fit. We would structure the contract based on that client's needs and the scale of the project. So, the kind of things that as a design business owner, you don't necessarily always want to do by yourself. And it's kind of nice to have, a little bit of input during that process. And so I became that person. And then also, I began to evaluate the direction of the business and where we wanted to take it and the best way to get it there. So, so a lot of strategizing involved, everything from office management to a little bit of HR to client interaction with the builders and the architects, because that's where a lot of our work came from.
What about just good old picking wallpaper and fabric? You did that in your job.
So
as well.
I also did that as well. So I still designed, I still pulled furniture and fabrics, and I still did installations just like everyone else on the team. So I was very much a part of that team, but also very much involved in the business aspect, whereas the rest of the team pretty much stayed in the creative category.
Okay, so that leads me to my next question. Did that fulfill your passion? I mean, you probably set out in your quest to be a designer back 10 years ago with that creative, creative appetite. Mm-hmm. So in the job of dealing with the business, did you ever peek your head over and kind of always see what was going on creatively, or did you feel like that was enough creativity for you?
I think that the last 10 years, but the last 6 years specifically, helped me define my passion. I think it helped define my passion, because you're right. Out of design school, and I've said this before, I always felt in design school there's only one path out of design school, and that's to either start your own business or go work for another designer, but you're going to spend the rest of your life picking furniture and fabrics and making homes beautiful. And that was just my thought process, and I don't know why. but it was. And so by exploring and getting involved on the business side, that really helped define my passion, and it helped me realize that it's the business of design that's my passion. Design is my passion, but there's so many categories and facets to design, and everybody kind of has their lane. And my lane, the lane that makes me happy and that fulfills me, is the business aspect.
Wow. I mean, I'm blown away because I've never heard that before from anyone. So that's super cool that you found a lane, A, because you have to have pretty big firm to even have somebody like you to be able to handle that aspect of it. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, my advice to design professionals, A, is, explore all of the different lanes. That's one message that I really like putting out there, that there are a lot of other opportunities within the design industry. You don't just have to do furniture and fabrics. You don't have to put yourself in a box. It's a huge industry. And my second bit of advice to design professionals and business owners specifically is that if you can, delegate some business responsibilities to someone in your organization. Not everyone in your organization has to be creative. It's always good to have one non-creative person in the mix who can focus on business and operations and things that are vital to keep the design business going.
Yeah, our gal here is the heartbeat. I mean, she is the boss of all of us.
Yeah.
And for that, I'm grateful.
And what's great about that is that it's a good example to the other people, the other team members within your office, because they see that role and the value associated with them, and its exposure to them. It's a realization that they could go there, that they can be that, if that's what they want to be.
True. Okay, so now we're going to get off topic for a minute. You are tatted up. Tatted up, and I love it. And
it's a short sleeve day.
It's a short sleeve day, and I want to hear, I mean, if you guys can take a look at Rick, he is as clean cut and adorable and semi-preppy.
Semi-preppy.
And then the sleeves come off, and it's Ink City. It's so cool. It's an art gallery.
It's my art collection.
What's going on, man?
It's my art collection. I've always loved tattoo art. It's always been a thing that I liked. And, it literally is my art collection. You know, people like paintings and different things, as do I. But it's an art form that I really appreciate and I've always been interested in. And so, but just like everything else, just like regular art that hangs on your wall, it's a little expensive. And so I took some time and did my homework and started researching my favorite artists and started making an investment in tattoo art.
And then you just can't put it in your will, though.
I get to take it with me.
You're taking it with you.
I get to take it with me. So I connected with the most incredible artist, whom
gorgeous.
I love and adore. His name is Dan Smith, and his company is called Capture Tattoo. He's right here in Tustin, in Old Town Tustin, and he's incredible. And, we connected. We have a lot of things in common. And, you know, these artists, you spend a lot of time with them. This investment is very face-to-face.
Yeah, it looks like you have had a lot of time with him.
And so we got to know each other. He's an incredible business person and an incredibly talented artist. And it's been a real pleasure getting to know him. And just like with everything else, you start with one little piece and then another little piece. And then that left arm's done. And then it's like, well, you need a matching right arm. And before you know it, you're running out of real estate.
Well, so I'm sure everyone asks you, like, are you done?
No.
Do you have any room left?
There's a
Your
little
face
bit
of, is open, I see.
There's a little bit of room left. There's a little bit of room left. Yeah. I'm on hiatus at the moment.
You are. Okay.
Yes. But that is something that definitely people don't really know about me. Until summer, but I always it's not for everyone, and I get that. And so when I'm during business hours, when I'm interacting with clients, especially when I was part of a team, I always wore long sleeves and I was always very respectful to people's perceptions. On the weekends, short sleeves. I've literally been in places where I have walked by, right by a client in a tank top and a baseball cap, and they didn't even know it was me. So I call it like my weekend uniform.
I love it. So fun. Okay, so speaking of clients, what has been your favorite experience with a client?
My favorite experience. There's been a few. We've had some really amazing clients over the years, and I've been exposed to some really incredible, talented people, great business people, but just very real nice people. You know, I always tell a story about a client that was, you know, so gracious whenever we would come to the house. She was so hospitable, and she would always make sure that there was drinks out, and she really, really treated us like a guest every time we walked into her home. And I've heard stories of other designers who remind fellow design professionals and peers that this is a business, this is a profession, and you're not necessarily part of the family, so you shouldn't think that. And I think that's an important point. But at the same time, the experience should always be pleasant. And we've had some wonderful, wonderful clients who have really embraced us and has shown us the best possible scenario as far as a work relationship. And those are far and few in between, I'm not gonna lie. But those are the things that really stand out to me. You know, when you walk in and the client just has your favorite drink ready. I mean, she used to just have the Perrier on the table and my favorite little protein bar that I loved, that I could never find in the grocery store. I don't know where she found them, but they were so delicious. And you know, it's things like that that are just so sweet. And you know, the clients that call you back after the installation and after the big reveal and say, you know what, we just want to spend time with you. We want to entertain you. We want to, you know, make some food and have a drink and just spend time with you guys.
Wow, that's pretty.
Like, that's exciting. Those are the things that I'll remember forever. Those are the things that are just, those are notable things.
That sounds really cool. And yeah, it's tough when you get such a good one like that, because you're like, hey, how come, where's my drink at the next
one? You don't want to let them go. That's when you really have to remind yourself that you're not family. But you don't want to let
them
go.
It at the end of the job. You know everything about what's going on in their own personal family and their lives and their jobs.
Sure.
It's so cool. And it's such a feeling of a breakup at the end, which it's not really, you know.
Like, I know, but it does feel that way, because in our market, you know, it's so long term, because we only did new construction. So the building process alone is 18 to 24 months, not to mention the time before and the time after. So it is a long relationship, and you get a little attached.
I love that. So what made you want to do a podcast, and how did you learn how to produce it? Like, is there a podcast for dummies book? I mean, you have you have legit microphones sitting here. You have some kind of a contraption I've never seen. So how did you break into this whole situation?
A lot of YouTube videos.
Oh, okay.
A lot of YouTube videos. You know, I only listened to a podcast for the very first time maybe 2 years ago. Oh. A girlfriend of mine downloaded a podcast for me to listen to on my flight to Italy, and she had to download it on my phone because I'd never done it before. And so I toyed with it a little bit, and on the flight back, I was looking for other podcast categories in interior design and business of design. And found a couple and started listening to them, and I was hooked. And at that time, this was about 2 years ago, I was thinking, I was developing a way to kind of start to give back to the design community. I was very involved with ASID a few years ago, and it was very consuming. It was very time consuming, but it was also very rewarding. And after that process is over, you're a little burnt out and you step away, and I started to miss it. And I started to miss the people, but I really missed being available to kind of inform and inspire. So I was looking for another way, an outlet to do that. And I thought maybe a podcast would be good. So I began exploring it, but I didn't know anything about podcasting. So I watched a bunch of YouTube videos and Googled a whole bunch. And, you know, just like any other industry, I'd like to think any other creative industry, reached out to a couple of people and said, hey, I like your podcast. Can you tell me how you do it? Because I think I want to do it too. And a fellow podcaster, Nick May from the Chase Lounge. I actually connected with him at the Design Bloggers Conference, which is now the Design Influencers Conference. And gosh, we chatted for like a half an hour.
Okay.
And he met him for the first time. And he's like, hey, listen, this is how it's done. These are the basics. And if you have any questions, give me a call. And so then I just took the ball and ran from it. I took the ball and I ran with it. Purchased up a little recorder, a couple of microphones.
Like, where'd you find these? I mean, you go on Amazon and type in,
I went to Guitar Store.
Oh, okay.
I went to the Guitar Store, and I'm like, hey guys, you're the professionals. Like, I need microphones. And they said, well, what are you going to do? And I told them, and they said, oh, these will work for you. And it's really been a trial and error process for me. And the designers that have agreed to contribute have been so patient and generous with the process. I've had a few episodes that didn't record and we had to do over.
Oh.
I've lost some data, during the edit process. So it's just kind of a trial and error process. I'm not really a techie guy, but it's been a fun challenge.
That's cool. Are people responsive when you reach out to them to do it, or is it 50-50?
They're incredibly responsive, actually. It's very, very refreshing to reach out to my design community and explain to them what I'm doing and why I want them to be a part of it, and for them to respond so enthusiastically. I haven't got a no yet. Knock on wood.
Who is your dream guest? Do you have anybody out there that just like, oh, it would be so cool to interview them?
Big name. There's so many designer. There's so many. I'm currently stalking Ray Booth. I think would be incredible. He's an amazing designer. He's very busy right now. He's got a lot of press going on with his book and his furniture line, but he is really kind of on the scene, and I think a lot of designers are wondering about him and his background and where he came from and where he's going, and that's the kind of stuff that I want to share. I want to know, and I want to share.
That's juicy.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that would be great.
Is he in California?
He is not. He's in Nashville.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, these people, I kindly reach out to them, and, you know, hopefully if our paths cross and we're able to set it up, that would be great. You know, Nate Berkus is on the list.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm working on that because, again, selfishly, these are people that I really admire and I think they're incredible. I've watched their careers and I think what they're doing is amazing. And so personally, I want to kind of absorb that energy, and then professionally, I want to put it out there for everyone else to enjoy.
Cool. How you've been, you say that you've been in the design business for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is it totally different from day one when you started? I mean, obviously with Pinterest and all that, but how, or is it faster? Is it easier? Is it more annoying? What is the descriptive word there?
I have seen it change before my own eyes. I tell this story as part of my lecture over at IDI, because when I was in design school, this was like 2005, 2006, 2007, and that was right about the time when the design industry was changing. It was going through this this media takeover with HGTV and with all of the online platforms coming out. And so that really changed design. And there was a lot of resistance, I remember. There was a lot of what I call old school designers who were not only teaching, but that I was exposed to, who liked the good old way. And I could tell that that good old way was going away. And I learned very quickly that it's gone for good. This is really just the new design industry. And I think everyone really just needs to embrace it. It has changed so much. The format as far as dealing with clients and pricing structures and things like that. So I've watched and I've also done firsthand. I've become very adaptive to, you know, the new state of design. And it's pretty exciting, actually. I think it's really exciting. Just what I've seen in the last 10 years, in the last 5 years, as far as information and inspiration and really just an interest from consumers about design has helped kind of grow and explode an entire industry for professional designers.
Yeah, it's the wild, wild west. I mean, totally. You can basically get your sourcing within 30 seconds of trying to look for it.
Absolutely.
And that's me, that's you, that's anybody who even wants it, whether you're a designer or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's incredible. I think it's incredible. And I love it because it allows so many more people who are passionate about design pursue a business,
mm-hmm.
and actually be interior designers.
Like moi. I probably should have gone to a couple of classes, but yeah, it's just, it's the information's there and it's not tough.
It's so great.
And so with your podcast, I know that it's grown exponentially. And so what are your future plans? I mean, are you going to take this on the road? Are you going to, dabble into TV or, you know, I mean, yeah. Are you going to remember my name in 10 years?
Of course I am.
When I see you down the street.
Stop it.
10 more tattoos.
If you recognize me, right? what's next? You know, so we're coming up. When this episode actually airs, this will be our anniversary episode.
Ooh.
And it'll be a year that I've been doing the podcast. And I really kind of gave myself a year to develop the podcast, make it what I needed it to be, kind of absorb the feedback from the design community and other people who are listening. And I think in year two, I'm going to focus on monetization, sponsorship, so that I can grow it. Because by doing that, it'll allow me to add other components to this design biz survival guide concept that will help, further grow the community, the design community. So as I'm developing those, I'll need the cooperation of sponsorship. So that'll be a big goal in the next year. Another big thing that I've done that I just recently launched is Design Biz Assistant. So if you go on the website now, there used to be a little tab under resources, and that has been replaced with consulting. And so I am no longer at the design firm that I was at for the last 6 years. I have gone off on my own now as a freelance consultant, Yay! Which I'm very excited about.
Congrats. Thank I'm so you. Excited for
Thanks
you.
So much. I'm excited about it. And I'm basically offering freelance consulting services, business services, not creative services, to interior design professionals. So I have found by talking to so many design professionals that the number one challenge is not having enough time to actually be creative because you're spending so much time running your business.
Yeah.
And then not being able to delegate a lot of those business tasks to your team because your team is focusing on creative, which they should be. And so I, in response to that, I'm making myself that business ally to design business owners to help tackle some of these challenges and issues that are natural to a design business. Yeah. It's very exciting.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, so give me a little blip of what that looks like. I know you keep talking about the business side, but what do you mean? Uh-huh. Are you talking billing? Are you talking how you allocate everybody's time so that nobody, so that you are being respectful to the client's budget? I mean, what
right.
is it? Like, you wake up and what's the first thing you do within this business role?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to depend on the design professional and what their challenge is. So every office is different and every office will have their own unique challenges. So my first approach would be to meet with that business owner and we would talk about those challenges and how they're affecting their day-to-day business.
Like, give me an example.
And so a typical example, the most common example I'm hearing is, processes and procedures. So some designers are saying, hey, listen, things are falling through the cracks, or I feel like maybe I'm leaving money on the table because this is such a whirlwind. And so if you could help me evaluate my processes and my procedures so that I can better understand where the deficiencies may lie, which you can't necessarily rely on a junior designer for that. You know what I mean? They're doing the creative and you want to be doing the creative. So if you delegate that responsibility to me, then I can focus on that and you can focus on your business. And then we regroup, I come back to you with a roadmap, and then we work together on a solution.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I always love to know, where did you grow up? Talk to me about your childhood.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be like therapy. Are you ready for this?
I'm totally ready for this.
You know what? Actually, not a lot of people know that about me either.
I don't either.
As we talk, I'm realizing that I don't really talk about myself very much at all. And so for those of you who are Southern California natives, I grew up in Pomona, California, which is Inland Empire. I was born and raised in Pomona, California, actually. Moved out to Orange County after high school. So I moved out to Irvine in 91-ish. Okay. I was kind of, after I graduated from high school, I was what I call stuck in the 13th grade for a while. Uh-huh. I didn't know what the heck I wanted to do with myself. And, my brother got all the smarts and he also got the college tuition fund. So
oh, really?
I was, he earned it. Oh. He earned it. Like, he was straight A all his life. He got scholarships. I mean, he belonged in college immediately after high school. I did not.
That's okay.
So I knew that after high school I needed to, buckle down and really focus on an education, but I didn't know what I really wanted to do. So I spent a lot of time kind of trying to figure that out, stuck in the 13th grade is what I like to call it. And then I moved to Orange County and just decided, until I figure it out, I have to get a real job. So I came out to Orange County. I started working in the automotive industry.
That's right.
Yeah. And so I got my first real grown-up job at Mazda in the mailroom. I started at the bottom.
No way.
And yeah, you totally literally worked in the mailroom. Mail. Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. And in fact, that's how I met my partner,
okay,
who I've been with for 28 years now.
28 years.
Yeah, can you believe it? So we actually met there. So everything happens for a reason. I dabbled in the automotive industry for about 5 years and then did a few other things until I finally figured out that, you know, design was what I wanted to do. But yeah, born and raised in Pomona, California, and then transplanted to beautiful Orange County, where I've been ever since.
What high school?
Gary High School.
Okay, I don't know where that is.
Yeah, every now and again, I'll run into someone from Pomona, and they're like, Gary, Ganesha, Pomona. There's like the three high schools.
Oh, really?
And yep, and that's how you know.
Awesome. So you have one brother.
I have two brothers.
Oh, two brothers.
Yeah, I have an older brother who lives in Chicago. He's 2 years older than me. And then I have a younger brother who's actually 13 years younger than me. So
oh,
my
wow.
mom took a little break in between and then came along the younger brother. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Pets.
Oh, my gosh.
I love to know about pets.
Oh, don't get me started.
Oh, please say you have some.
I have a Portuguese water dog who
okay.
just rules my life. Her name is Lucy, and she's absolutely adorable, and she's been on the Instagram feed once or twice.
Okay.
And I just love her. I mean, life without a dog, I just can't imagine it. I simply can't imagine it.
Can't either.
Yeah, and she's such a great dog, and she's so lucky she goes to work with my partner every day. So I only see her at nights and on weekends. I feel like it's a custody thing almost.
Is he still in the automotive business?
He's not in automotive, okay. No. So our family business is in water treatment
and
purification, yeah. So they do manufacturing, and so she's a shop dog, and she goes to work every day. She's very busy, and then she comes home. She's very tired, and yeah, I just love her. I just love her. I'm a total dog person. I'm a dog lover for sure.
I love that. And are you married?
We are married.
You got married.
Yeah, we officially got married when it was passed in California, out of respect to all the people that worked so hard to make that happen.
I've heard that story so many times.
Yeah. Very important thing to do. A lot of people work very, very hard to make that happen. So
for decades.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So it would be a total slap in the face not to take advantage of that amazing privilege that we're afforded now. So yes, we did.
Cool.
We did, yeah.
So you are super outgoing, and you have that kind of a personality that I can tell is not afraid to talk to strangers, meet new people, and you're telling me you're an introvert. What's this all about?
I'm a total introvert. I know. It's this thing that I'm learning about fellow designers as well. I like to ask that question, and I'm not shocked anymore, because so many outgoing design professionals and influencers who are out there on a daily basis moving and shaking and making it happen just want to go home and be in their pajamas. And, you know, I just had lunch with a friend yesterday, and we were talking about this, and yeah, I am a total introvert. I mean, in order to do what I do, I have to be out there, and I have to be talking to people, and I have to be on display, and I have to be moderating panels to promote all of these things that are so important to me. But when I'm not doing that, I want to be at home in my pajamas, on my couch, hugging my dog, watching some TV. I really love my house.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I really love being at home. And, you know, these days we're all so busy, and it's really a luxury to actually be home. You know, so yeah, that's me, the introvert.
I wouldn't have guessed it.
Yeah, I'm not moderating a panel or, you know, waving a flag somewhere, I'm holed up in my house.
But that kind of a personality does not line up with starting a podcast to me, you know,
right.
Because you've got to go out and kind of hustle. Then
yeah.
You've got to go out and meet all these new people when you'd rather be, let's just call it what it is, you'd rather be in your pajamas. So I don't think I would do it. I get so exhausted, same thing with the... the social aspect of design and talk all day that, yeah, same thing. I want to go shut it down, but
yeah.
You don't, you decided to take it to the next level and
I did.
People. And I'm sure you scope a lot of people on Instagram or wherever you find people to interview.
But. I do. I have to pick up the phone. I have to make that call. I have to go to market, and I've got to stock them. I've got to do what I have to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But when I'm at market, when I'm at Las Vegas market, you know where to find me at 9 PM.
Oh,
I'm in bed.
Really?
I'm that guy.
I was going to say the blackjack table.
Nope.
So we all have them. Hardly anyone talks about them. What's your pet peeve?
What's my pet peeve?
Pet peeve in this whole design world.
Oh my gosh. I love everything about it. No, I actually
do
have a pet peeve. I do have a pet peeve. I currently have There's this, and I've been talking about it a little bit on Instagram, and I'll talk about it with pretty much anyone that'll listen. There's this thing happening right now in interior design where there's a lot of comparison. And I think it's stemming maybe from social media and that whole very glossy surface fake look. I was going to say superficial look of what's happening in interior design. And I appreciate that. I love a good Instagram feed. I love a beautiful glossy magazine. We love to see beautiful things. But I think when we're interacting with each other as design professionals, I think it's time to get real. And I hate hearing other design professionals compare themselves to someone else. I hate hearing someone say, well, so-and-so is this, and I'm only this. Ooh. And I think it's not a good thing. And I discourage it on all levels. I think it's super important that every design professional realize that they're significant in their own right. We're all doing the same things. We're all waking up in the morning. We're all hustling. We're making our clients happy. We're making things happen. No matter if you're working from your kitchen table or if you're running an entire empire. You know, I talked about this with Alexa Hampton a couple of weeks ago, and she's also a very big advocate of that, of really making it an even playing field. You know, I listened to her on a podcast. And okay. Someone actually had said, well, I'm certainly no Alexa Hampton, but, and she's like, oh, yes, you are. Yes, you are. Because we both wake up in the morning and we do the same things. When we leave here, I'm going to meet a client and then I'm going to go to my drafting table and you're going to do the same thing. It doesn't matter that, you know, I have this big name and that maybe you don't. We're doing the same thing.
Yeah, that's great.
We're on the same mission. It's the same service. It's the same goal. It's the same passion.
Well, no comparing. Said.
No comparing.
That's a tough one, and I don't think that's specifically with the design world. I think that's with every industry. Mm-hmm. That's life, but yeah. It just gets elevated now that we have this social media.
Yeah,
elevated, exaggerated, blown out of proportion to the point where we're living in a super interesting world because no one's monitoring any of that. And we have no idea what it's doing to, especially like the up and coming generation.
Right.
But as adults, same thing. Like, oh, well, you know, the exclusion and the mm-hmm. feelings of hurt. It's
oh yeah. Like you said, as adults, if it's affecting us that way, imagine what it's doing to you.
To the kids. Yeah.
Wow.
It's not good.
Crazy.
There's so many great things about social media and connecting and
completely.
But then there's this dark side that I don't even think we're going to know for a couple of decades really what mm-hmm. that looks like.
Yeah,
to our brain, to our lives, to mental health, all of that.
Right,
it's going to be interesting.
Very interesting.
But there, like you said, there are some really great parts about it too.
Amazing parts, and so. Start by not comparing yourselves, people.
Let's just start there.
It's not healthy.
So, what do you think is going to happen with your podcast after this?
Like, what's next?
What are your big goals? Are you going to take this worldwide? Are you going to expand? And will we have t-shirts someday? Or
yes, we're going to have t-shirts indeed. I think I'm going to try. I'm working on expanding, obviously growing the downloads and the followers and that sort of thing. And in doing so, we'll see if it kind of crosses over into maybe another market. I'm not so sure. I do think that there's a demographic out there of design enthusiasts who would probably benefit from it. You kind of have to talk design talk. You kind of have to get it. I don't think it's for everyone, but I do think that it could inspire a larger demographic. And so I'll be working on ways to kind of do that.
That's awesome. So thanks everybody for tuning in. And this was fun to take over your whole business. And I'll probably never have a chance to do it again. So
you never know. You could be my new co-host.
I don't know. I don't think I'm very good. And I can't stand the sound of my voice.
You're great.
So anyways, I so appreciate you being able to turn the tables and tell us how you started. And I think it's super exciting because you've definitely opened up some hush-hush topics and exposed them, and which is beneficial to all of us. So thank you for doing that.
And thank you for doing this. I'm glad that you were the person to ask the questions. I can't think of a better person to do this with, so I appreciate it.
Oh, boy.
We get each other.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Bye, everyone.
Well, that was definitely eye-opening. Being on the other side of the microphone, so to speak, was different, and it was a lot of fun. You know, when Riley pitched the idea of turning the tables, I felt like the anniversary episode would be a perfect opportunity for that. And I just can't believe it's been a year already. I mean, time certainly flies when you're having fun. I want to take a moment and I want to thank all of you from the bottom of my heart for sharing and supporting the podcast. I mean, your support has really made this crazy idea of mine a reality. And it's proven to me that any effort to inform and inspire the design community is one worth pursuing. As I mentioned, we're looking for a few good sponsors to take this platform to the next level. So if you're an industry ally, and if you're interested in partnering with us to elevate the design community, email me at rick@designbizsurvivalguide.com and let's talk. For you design professionals interested in the new Design Biz Assistant concept, visit the website designbizsurvivalguide.com to learn more and to submit your request for a consultation. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, get out there and inspire.